This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. Okay, so the recorder came up the first time. I have ordered another recorder. It's supposed to be in today. I'm going to adjust this just a little bit.
Planetary
there we
scale.
Go.
So for me,
stop it.
Yeah, going off.
So there you go. Ain't it always the way? But it's time to upgrade. This little recorder has served me well for 2009 to 15 years, I think. Something like that. I've been doing podcasts for 15 years. So, you know, this is like podcast 811. So if you divide that by 52, which is what? 152, 811, 3, just under 300 left. Yeah, I think it's 15 years. So, you know, it's time. So I'm getting a Tascam coming in. It's actually a 6-channel recorder. 6-channel or 4-channel? I think it's a 6-channel. I don't need 6 channels, but, you know, it was kind of the mid-range, and so I thought, fine, let's just do it. As it turns out, it was cute because I had been collecting all of my gift cards for some time, and so I had several $100 worth of gift cards sitting there, and I had used some of them on the costumes I've been working on, and so I had a little bit left over, and so I went ahead out, you know, went out, got the Tascam. There was like a little bit of a discount on it, and so I did the discount, and then I put all my gift cards on it that I had, and I got close, and then I had some points left over from my card, so I put them on it, got closer, and then I just had some cash I had been given for birthdays that I'd been saving as well, and that was enough to make it zeros. So I do have another recorder coming in. We'll switch over to that recorder for next week. We'll see if it all sounds good. If it doesn't, then we'll do something else. But all is well. And I'm actually going to record the full length today because I don't have any stops to make on my way home. So I have been making quick little stops on my way home, and that means that I really am only recording for about 15 minutes, but we should have the full 20 minutes this time. So yay. Maybe longer. We'll see. Writing is going well. It's going to be really interesting to see if I can make my 10,000 words this week. If I don't, it's not a crisis. But I got started late on Sunday, and I was trying to figure out why it seems like in recent years it's just been so much more difficult than it was in earlier years to get my 3,000 words in on Sundays. And then I realized, you know, when I set up this schedule years and years ago of doing 3,000 words on Sunday, I was actually going to the early morning service, and I was going to the early morning service, and in the process of going to the early morning service, Nett and I would go out and grab a bite to eat afterwards. The early morning service was over, you know, 9:30 in the morning, grab a bite to eat, we get back home, I'm back home at 10:30. I'm sitting down to write like at 11 o'clock. Plenty of time left in the day. As it is now, if I'm running sound at church, I have to be in at church at like 7:45, so there's no time to write ahead of time because I go out for a little jog. And then by the time church is over, it's like noon or so, and then we go out and get something to eat, and now it's 1:30-ish. I'm back home by 2. By the time I get all the little things started, like laundry and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's 3:30. Okay, well, that might make a difference. So, anyways, it'll be fine. I have so few books left now, since I'm a quarter of the way through book 22, I basically have two books and 0.75. I know at this point that I will get this finished, even if I go off schedule. I'd like to stay on schedule, because I really like the idea of I got on a schedule and I stayed on a schedule for 24 books. So I like that idea. And I think we're going to be fine, even though I'm missing some words this week. But this is the weekend that we're going to try to finish up over at my mother-in-law's duplex. My wife has been working like crazy to get everything done, and so we just have a few little things to finish up. And she said, I think I'm going to need your help this weekend. I said, that's fine. So we'll go over there. The movers are coming for the big stuff. The movers are coming tomorrow at 11:30. And I warned them. I said, I might have time to get home and get changed, but if not, I'm going to be in costume. So... So the lady I was talking to do the scheduling, she thought that was funny. So yeah, it'll be fine. But anyway, so we're close. And we'll get all that taken care of. And I'll get what writing done that I can this weekend. It's interesting because, as I have mentioned, it really has worked out well to be taking to Aiden to school on the mornings that I do that and bringing him back, because I just have to plop down on the couch and sit there beside him, because Aiden is not the type of little boy that you want to leave by himself for very long. So it's meant that I just have to focus on being in that chair, and if I'm writing, I have to just absolutely focus on writing. So, you know, I have been able to get caught up even when I had a lot of words to write, simply because I'm fixed to that chair. So it's a fascinating thing. We do have small groups tonight. And then I net wanted some help getting her mom back home. And then I've got one little repair I need to do on the costume for tomorrow. So we'll see if I get any ready. If I don't, it'll be all right. Costumes are coming along. I am still working on this shirt that I saw a picture of. I'm working on the second sleeve at this point. Once I get that done, then I've got to put a collar on it, put some hemming on the shirt, and then I have to start working on the jabot. I do have 2 weeks. I would really like to get this done sooner than later, because I still have to get back to the pretend that you're a time traveler. So there's more stuff to do there, but I think it's going to be fine. It's fine. Pretend that you're a time traveler is the first or second week in December. So even if I don't get this done until the week of Halloween, I will still have 4 or 5 weeks to get pretend that you're a time traveler. And it's mostly just slapping things together. So I think it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Step at a time. So, for this week, I came across, I'm really glad I clicked on this, because I came across a podcast with Joe Rogan, and it is a phenomenal podcast. I heartily, heartily recommend that you listen to it. All of Joe Rogan's podcasts are multiple hours long. This one is no exception. It is over 2 hours long. But I heartily recommend that you listen to it. Because I'm only going to hit some highlights. I'm not going to hit them all. I'm not going to have nearly the statistics they had. But it is fascinating, and it gives a tremendous amount of insight on why we are where we are with the medical industry and the food industry, and what is happening to Americans' health and why, and what can we do about it? And frankly, if we don't get this fixed, the consequences will be significant. The consequences are already significant. So, this podcast is on YouTube. So if you just go to YouTube and type in Rogan and then the number 2210, 2210, 2210, Rogan 2210. A podcast will come up with Joe Rogan Experience, with two guests on Callie Means and Casey Means, and it is worth the listen, because I think you will be astonished at the information that they have. As a little tickler, Callie Means worked for the pharmaceutical industry, and I think the food industry, and he talked about how that in his time, you know, he was part of sending money to researchers so that they would discover certain things that they wanted discovered, like how that Coke is not bad for you. So he was a part of all that, right in the thick of it, and finally got to the place where he couldn't do it anymore. His wife, Casey, trained to be a medical doctor, was a medical surgeon for a while, got to the place where she couldn't do it anymore because of what she was seeing. And they have dedicated themselves to spreading information about the state of the health of citizens of America and why they think it's so bad. Because it is bad. They have lots of statistics. And they talk about the fact that, look, let's not even talk about what the potential causes are. Let's just look at the numbers. And we can see that whatever is causing this, America is in terrible shape when it comes to health. One of the statistics that I think I can remember them quoting is that in Japan, the childhood obesity rate is 3%. In America, it's 50%. 50. 50%. That's not good. Because an obesity rate of 50% is going to bring everything else along with it. It's going to be bring diabetes along with it. That used to be called adult onset diabetes because you never saw children coming down with type 2 diabetes. And now we do. And they quoted the statistics as to how many children are coming down with type 2 diabetes. And they talked about, one of the things they talked about is the great rejoicing that there was as a bill moved through Congress when I think the House approved a bill so that children as young as 6, I think it was, could get subsidized help from the government to take Ozempic. And of course, that's the weight loss drug that what you do is you inject this, and it's a GLP-1 agonist because of the food people are eating, their satiety signals are broken, which was done intentionally by those who engineered the food, so that you don't know when to stop eating that stuff. And what GLP-1 does is it antagonizes that, what Ozempic does is it antagonizes that GLP-1 hormone production so that you feel full and you stop eating. Of course, you're not really changing any of your eating habits, so all that you're really doing is starving yourself. But a whole lot of people lose a whole lot of weight on it. The problem is that what you've done is, if you want to keep that weight off, you've medicalized that person the rest of their lives. Because as soon as they come off the GLP-1, if their society circuit isn't working, they're right back in the same situation again, because they don't know when to stop eating. Because that is what ultra-processed foods do. And so Congress's solution that was put through, of course, by suggestions from the pharmaceutical industry and maybe suggestions from the food industry is, oh, well, just approve them for Ozempic at $1,600 a month per individual. And they're going to make this available for children down to the age of 6. That's not really a solution. So this whole podcast talks about, A, what's wrong with just looking at the bare minimum of the statistics and recognizing that there is a problem, unquestionably. There is a problem. And of course, they talk about how that if they try to point out that they're a problem, there's a problem. They just get called right-wing radicals and every other ist and conspiracy theorist that, you know, oh, if there was this kind of problem with the food that we eat, oh, somebody would, you know. But what's interesting is Casey, she was really trying to defend doctors and saying, you know, you have to understand how doctors are educated. And she said, I didn't know anything about nutrition as a doctor. Maybe she had one low-level class. That was it. And she said, I've learned more about nutrition and the body and how things are actually absorbed in the body from a holistic system. She said, I was not trained to look at the body as a holistic system. I was trained to diagnose a problem and solve that by cutting it out. And she was talking about how doctors, I think the phrase that she used is something like, you eat what you kill or something like that. And the idea is, listen, the only way you're going to survive as a surgeon is to do lots of surgeries. And so embedded in the whole system is just, as soon as something gets diagnosed, well, I guess we got to get the surgery done. Or as soon as, well, let's prescribe you this pill. And the other thing that was interesting that they were talking about, the whole medical system, is that the whole medical system, when you say that the highest form of proof is double-blind placebo studies, the only thing you can test with double-blind placebo studies is synthetic drugs. It's the only thing you can test, because it's impossible to do a double-blind placebo study when you're trying to examine the effects of more than one thing. So if you're trying to say, okay, what is the overall effect of our diet on XYZ, maybe in combination with the drugs that we're taking, in combination with our lifestyles, well, you can't test that with a double-blind study. And so since the mantra is that the double-blind study is the highest form of research, the only thing that gets researched with double-blind studies, placebo-controlled double-blind studies, is pills. So that's the only solutions that we find. And to hear them talk about it, they go back to when these things started, and the textbooks were actually written for doctors. And in fact, what you had is you had a big industrialist, I forget which one, who actually had the first guidelines put together for medical schools. And according to them, it was designed so that what you were going to have as a solution were going to be this new era of drugs. Because they don't necessarily want people to take control of their health by eating better, getting outside, exercising, etc., etc., etc. They would rather just have you take a pill. So the whole conversation is extremely interesting. And frankly, frightening. If I was the type of person to be frightened. Because we are in deep trouble from a health perspective in this country. And they're convinced that the only way out of this is to get enough attention on this. I'm backing into my garage. To get enough attention on this that you can actually change regulations. Now, both of them are very optimistic about what can be done because they believe that with the right change of regulations, that you could make significant progress on getting changes made and then shoving food manufacturing companies and shoving pharmaceuticals in like the right direction. So one of the things they said, it was fascinating, is when you look at food production in the United States, what you see is that there are 10,000 chemicals that are approved to be used in food production. 10,000 chemicals. And the reason there's so many is because the FDA has this catch-all called generally recognized as safe. And guess who decides what is generally recognized as safe? Well, it's the insecticide companies and the food companies, and all they have to do is say, well, this is similar to that, so this is generally recognized as safe. So you end up with 10,000 chemicals that are being put on our food. And they said in Europe, it's 400. That's the difference. And I mean, in field after field after field, you're talking about the manufacture of plastics, you're talking about the manufacture of pesticides, you're talking about the engineering of food, you're talking about the manufacture of drugs that supposedly solve the problems that we're in. In field after field after field after field after field, what is going on in America is at a fundamentally different level than, for instance, in Europe. I mean, I heard RFK Jr., talk about just something as simple as yellow and red dye. That there's certain yellow and red dyes that are just not allowed in Europe. But they're very bright and happy colors. And so, of course, they're used here in the United States, even though they have been associated with some pretty significant side effects. They just keep using them. Because if your Fruit Loops are brighter and shinier, people will eat more of them. And all of this just keeps going on and on and on. The reason that this becomes critical now, and what they kept stressing, was that the best way for this to change is to have an executive who is willing to stand out in front and take all the bashing that an executive is going to get, a new president is going to get, if you try to make changes to the regulations. There will be screaming and gnashing of teeth, and there will be powerful lobbies, and there will. But if you can get an executive that has the wherewithal to say, this is not right, all of these side effects are bad, we're going to try this. You know, then maybe something that can change, What is interesting is that the husband, Callie, means, he said he was a never-Trumper. He had been a never-Trumper for years and years and years. I mean, they just flat out and says, I don't like some of the things Trump says. Period. But, interestingly enough, Callie means was the person who kind of made it happen, this alliance. Well, he made the introductions, let's put it that way, this alliance between Trump and RFK Jr. And I'm not going to get the story exactly correct, but it was like he and his wife had done a podcast with Tucker Carlson. And Callie, the husband, said after the Trump assassination, he said it was like an out-of-body experience. He said, I just knew that I needed to get Trump and RFK together. I just knew I needed to do that. And he said, I called RFK, which, of course, we call that a whisper, called RFK Jr., and I talked to him about it. And said, look, you know, I think you should have a conversation with Donald Trump. And he said, I finally talked him into doing that. And then I called Tucker Carlson and I got phone numbers and got the two of them together. And what was interesting, he said, you need to understand that the conversations between Trump and RFK Jr. went on for weeks. And according to what he knows, the tenor of those conversations was not, is this a political hot button issue? Can you make political gain out of this? The tenor of those conversations is we have a terrible problem with the health of Americans, and we have to do something about it. And it was Trump's understanding of that and his desire to do something about it that really convinced RFK Jr. to drop out of the race, support Trump, because he truly believed that Trump could stand his ground, because he has stood his ground against all kinds of attacks. So from Callie and Casey Mean's perspective, this is a big enough crisis that their only question is, who do we think in the race is going to be willing to stand up to the big pharmaceuticals, stand up to the food industry, stand up to the insecticide industry? Who is going to be willing to do that? And there's really only one answer. The problem with all of this is that when you have a diet of ultra-processed foods, and for the average person now, if I remember their statistic, they are getting 67% of their calories from ultra-processed foods. And when you have that, you are ravaging your insulin system because of the sugar content. And when you're doing that, making yourself insulin resistant, you're increasing your stress levels, it just all cascades. And in fact, people become more anxious, they become depressed, so you have swaths of the American public who are suffering from anxiety and are on SSRIs this whole thing is just destroying them. It's just destroying their ability to think. It's destroying their ability to function. It's not great. And if it keeps going on, I mean, what's going to happen to the population of America? So it's not really a partisan issue. And they said that over and over again. They said there are Democrats, Republicans, you know, there's people are recognizing this is a huge problem. And it has to be dealt with. And we've got to get control of this. And the question is how, and seemingly the best, fastest way to get control of this is to get an executive elected who will take on these massive companies. Of course, we keep coming back to our main problem, and that is, if it looks like he's going to get elected, are these companies going to allow this? Because you are talking about trillions of dollars in profits. And if he gets elected, how long is he going to stay elected? Because you are talking about trillions of dollars. So this is going to be like really interesting to see how this goes. But I heartily recommend that you spend the 2+ hours listening to Callie and Casey Means talk to Joe Rogan. Just go to YouTube, search for Rogan. It's 2210. It's worth the listen. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.